A community that knows itself takes care of itself. The stories of those who live in the Matsu Borough are as varied as the people themselves. Some you have heard. Some, perhaps, you have not. This is Voices of the Matsu, bringing our stories to life.
Hi there, I'm Emily Forstner, your host today. According to the 2023 Census Reporter, military veterans account for about 12.5% of the Matsu. That's 20% higher than anywhere else in Alaska and double the percentage found in the lower 48. This got me to thinking about those behind the scenes of the men and women in active duty, the Guard, the Reserves, and retired veterans. They're children. And I think they're worth getting to know just a little bit better. So I ask you, what better time to get to know what it's like to be a military child than in April, the month of the military child? That's why today we get to know firsthand what it means to be a military brat in the Matsu when we hear from two graduating seniors, and what it means for the school liaison when it's your job to support military families and children on and off base for Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson, J-Bear. In what we call We Serve Too. Palmer High senior Cora Klink came into the studio on a Thursday afternoon after soccer practice. She comes from a deeply rooted military family.
My dad's dad was military. He was Army, I believe. And then my dad has five siblings, and all of them are also in the military, different branches. So I'm very military.
Joining Cora was Emma Keachley. Emma is a senior at Matsu Middle College. You may recognize her name as being the sound editor for this podcast, and you'd be right. She also came from soccer practice. Emma is more of a first-generation military child.
So my mom, dad, and my stepdad were all Air Force.
I don't want to mess up. So military child or military brat, how do the two seniors see themselves?
I call myself a brat, but then sometimes people don't get it and they're like, what?
I call myself a brat because from my understanding of the terms, like both your parents were in the military. Yeah. So like I've kind of considered myself full-on military brat for several reasons.
Holly Warners joined me in the studio on April 11th, the official day of the military child. She is one of two school liaisons for the J-Bear base, located 35 miles south of Palmer. Holly also was a military child.
I sure was, yeah, and I'm really proud of that. I've been connected with the military my entire life. My dad was in the Air Force, and I was born on Lakenheath Air Force Base in England. And then from there, my father had several different duty stations, really cool ones, too. He was in Germany and Libya, and then we came stateside and hopped around here. You know, for the bad that comes with it, there's also a lot of good. I got to see a lot of places, and I feel like it made me really resilient, you know.
Brat. That term in the military was first used in 1921. The British Regiment Attached Traveler. It referred to the wives and families that moved along with a soldier. Over time, it's morphed into a general moniker for the child of the military, and that's how we got military brat.
I do know this is a term of endearment. We don't use it too much anymore. We like to call them military-connected students. But, yeah, we were always known as brats, my brother and I, you know, military brats who've lived everywhere. And it's really cool. And, you know, it's a badge of honor for me to be a military brat. I love it. Yeah, the term's not used too much widely. I don't know.
I read that it stands for brave, resilient, adaptable, and tough.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I just assumed it was, you know, a brat.
I think it means good things.
Yeah, that's cool.
Holly served in the Navy and worked then in a variety of ways within schools, school-age director to sports director. Now she works supporting the military child as a school liaison at J-Bear.
The opportunity came up, and I just threw my hat in. I was chosen, and I couldn't be happier. So we work with families of military members, retired, all branches. That can be the Guard, that can be the Reserve, active duty. So those families that have kids that are preschool, so right before kindergarten all the way up to the 12th grade, we try to help those families as they transition from one location to the other. We really want to make sure that those barriers to quality education are minimized.
The military child attends, on average, between 6 and 8 schools.
Oh, gosh. I gotta count.
Are we including preschool? 6, I think.
It's hard to keep track.
3, then Florida.
7, 8. 8. 8 including us.
Yeah, 6.
I think my mother told me I went to something like 9 schools and, you know, in those 12 years. And that's a lot of moves. And I can relate to these kids because I remember how hard it was to leave your friends, to leave maybe a sports team that you were successful at, or if you had a teacher that you really loved and admired, and just, you know, the culture of different places, you just start to love it and feel comfortable, and then your dad comes home and says, hey, we're moving, and it's just a sinking feeling that comes over you because, you know, you got to start all over again, you know, and it's usually not at a great time. You know, it's in the middle of a semester or toward the end of a school year, and you don't, you know, you're starting at ground zero. You're not the cool kid yet. You haven't met anyone, and the teacher always says, we have a new student, and you had to stand up and say where you're from, and it's just, it's horrible.
The worst part, especially right now as a senior, is credit transferring, especially from different states, because I went to 2 different high schools in North Carolina, which weren't that terrible with credit transferring, but then to up here, it's, like, totally different. So applying to colleges, I have to send in 3 separate transcripts. Applying to colleges and scholarships really tough right now.
That sucks.
It's like no one really thinks about that unless you're a military child.
Just education in general too, because like I move from one school to another, and like I said before, like I don't think I ever actually learned like the mean, mode, median. Like I never actually learned how to do that because
yeah,
there's a gap between like school districts and stuff. Like
math is so hard because like, you skip back and forth.
Yeah, because like you'll be in one place and they'll be in one section, and you go somewhere else and they've already covered that. I don't want to say like the curriculum was necessarily different, but it was. When you move around so much, things get lost in translation, kind of thing.
Education is a quality of life issue for families, so it's a retention issue. If a member is not focused on their job because they're worried about my child is miserable at school or my child is not succeeding at school, that affects their whole psyche, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, years ago, it used to be kind of the joke. If the military wanted you to have a family, they'd be packed in your sea bag, right? Well, that's not the case now. Our leadership recognizes the value of keeping those members. They're trained. They're providing to the mission. And we hate to lose them because their family's not happy. So we really want to make sure that the members' needs are getting met for their kids.
I feel like the education difference is, like, dramatic. In Fort Bragg, where I lived, or Fort Liberty. No, it's Fort Bragg now. They changed the name. I was in middle school for my first year there, 8th grade, and it was on base. They didn't have a high school on base. Mm-hmm. So I had a good education there. Like, all my teachers were there. And then I transitioned to an off-base high school, and it was also in a bad area. So my education dropped severely. Like, some teachers weren't in all the classes. Like, I had teachers running between classes. And one of my teachers left halfway through the year. Yeah, that wasn't a good school.
Hey, Holly, sounds like North Carolina could use someone like you.
This was my favorite high school up here. And a lot of people say that the education up here is bad, but they've never been to North Carolina because it was terrible down there. I'm like, wow, this school's so great. There's a teacher in every classroom.
The majority of Holly's work centers for families living on base and in Anchorage because that is where the majority of military children live. But there are a significant number of military families, especially the retired veteran, who choose to live off base and in the MATSU.
In my circumstance alone, I came out here, I thought I'd spend a couple of years, and I just fell in love with Alaska. And I think a lot of people do. They come out here for an assignment, and they're like, oh my gosh, we're going to retire in Alaska. So there's a large number of retirees.
You know, that just cracks me up, because I know so many people, when they retire, they go, and I'm out of here.
Oh, really? Oh, and we hear just the opposite. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm going to stay here forever and make it my home.
Corey's dad was a paratrooper. He retired as a lieutenant colonel after more than 20 years in the Army. The family moved for the very last time to the MATSU just 2 years ago.
My mom is the one who really wanted to come to Alaska, and she loves Alaska. Even though she stays inside, I think she likes the views and the animals. She loves the moose. And my dad, I guess he was like, happy wife, happy life.
That's not wrong.
Yeah. And they both loved it. So the Mat-Su Valley, especially because you're completely surrounded by mountains, so it's like full Alaska experience.
Emma's mother worked as an assistant chaplain and retired as a master's sergeant after 20 years of service in the Air Force.
So my mom moved up here, and then she was like, I'm going to retire here. I don't want to move anywhere else. Kind of like she fell in love with the views and things. All I do is a
double talk. Mat-Su falls in my footprint, so I get to come out here and visit with the schools, check in with them.
Holly supports family of active duty, reserve, National Guard, and retired military children. She is the point of contact for families.
It may have some sort of thing that we can help them out with on base.
Military children need a lot of resilience and adaptability. How does your program help develop that?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm glad you asked it. So we have some transition programs for our kids. We have one right now that we called Anchored for Life, and it started with the Navy, and the Air Force has adapted it to it's a peer-to-peer program where the kids welcome each other. You know, there's this immersion, if you will, before getting thrown to the lions. So they meet a friend right away.
Living off base in the Mat-Su, children can miss out on some of these resources by the very definition of being off base. And without other extended family connections like grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, the move for a military child to a new school off base can be particularly daunting. So how can Mat-Su educators help?
I think the best thing is to know your students, where they come from. You know, I know out here in the valley that, you know, I'm in the classrooms quite a bit, and first thing I always do is, like, how many of you guys have someone in your family that's in the military? And I even see the surprise on the teachers' faces sometimes, like they just didn't even know that they had these military-connected students in their classroom. And I think understanding that culture, that we all come from different places and that we all have these very different experiences, but it's also a shared connection that military kids have.
Holly was at a local elementary school the other day and asked that very question.
Hands just came up, and I saw this instant look of, you know, the kids were looking at each other like, well, I had no idea that your father was in the military. So I just think asking the question, who's in the military, is just a good start. The Air Force in particular has gotten really good about letting us know when new families are coming, so that we can front load them with options and let them know what's available in the community for their kids. Yeah, I just, you know, even if you're far flung from the base, you're just a phone call away, 907-384-7500, and we will pick up the phone and we will talk you through any situation that you're having with education. If we don't have the answer, we're going to find it for you. So Adele, who is my partner in crime, my other school liaison, we have this saying, it's called no wrong door. If you give us a call, if we don't know the answer, we're going to find it out for you. We'll do the research. We're going to help you. We'll advocate for you. We'll listen to you.
So could a teacher call for support?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we would encourage them to.
Holly's role as liaison helps families during deployments, too.
So when parents deploy, hopefully there's a family member that gets to stay behind with the kids. That's not always the case. So that's a really difficult time for families. And that's part of why this job exists, was because of heavy employment or deployments. The military saw the need for the stress that was putting on families, and how could they help them.
We've been talking with Holly Warner, school liaison for Jayberry and high school seniors choir Clink and Emma Keachley in We Serve Too on Voices of the Mat-Su, produced for Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. Stay with us when we learn more about what it is to be a military child, with making friends, shared memories, and deployments.
Yeah, so my dad, he had 4 trips to Afghanistan, I think one to Iraq, he was gone, I think, a total of 47 months. That's what he told me. So that's like 4 years. Yeah, he was in and out a lot. Like, it just felt like he'd be gone a year, he'd come back, and then he'd be gone another year.
Emma's situation is somewhat unique for the military family. Her mother, father, and stepfather are all retired military. According to the Department of Defense, that's less than 10% of military families that are dual enlisted. And her mother was a single parent for a time in the military, representing just 6% of active duty families.
Oh, I'll just see her when she gets back kind of thing for me.
Whereas Cora's family unit represents a more typical military family, an active duty spouse along with a civilian spouse.
So my mom was taking care of everyone, and then at all points during the deployment, she had little kids to take care of, so yeah. When I was younger and he would get deployed, it was just like, oh, he was gone. And I think it definitely made me more of an independent person, especially because it was my dad, so I had to learn to take care of things myself. Especially being the oldest girl in my family, I definitely took care of my little brothers a lot. I think it was the second time he got deployed. I remember I started crying. Like, I knew that I was sad, but I didn't really understand that he, like, could be killed, but I knew that it was bad.
My mom we were never deployed overseas. My stepdad was.
And you lived in Korea.
Yeah, that was, yeah, the food there was great. Yeah, that was a different experience. It's fun. I just remember being able to be safe on base, and then my parents would be super strict as soon as we went into the city. I don't cry at, like, anything. I'm pretty, not that emotional, I think, but every time I see, like, deployment reunion and the kids hugging their dad, always crying.
Yeah, they're
why?
No, they're just sad.
It's relatable.
Or like seeing their dogs for the first time in like several years. Sad.
I feel like being a military child has definitely impacted my ability to make friends. I feel like I'm a very friendly person and I can make connections quick. I also feel like it negatively impacted me because I don't think I have any long-term relationships. As soon as I move, like, I can try to keep connections, but most of the time they just fade out.
Like, you adapt, you change yourself to kind of fit in, and then you kind of lose yourself. And so that was kind of hard coming into Palmer, was I didn't feel like myself, and I've kind of grown through that. But at the same time, it's hard.
Yeah, I agree with the part where you kind of, like, change your personality. Like, I feel like my personality is so malleable now because I have gone to school in on base, and the difference between on base and off base, mm-hmm. like school wise, friends wise, is really different because on base you're surrounded with other people who are moving all the time and who are in the same situation as you. But then you come to a small town where everyone's grown up together, mm-hmm. so it's hard to make friends and it's hard, like, show your true self. I don't know. You gotta mold your personality to fit in.
Especially with Palmer too, I know, like, just a bunch of people who live in Palmer have lived here their whole lives, and those connections stay with them through, like, all 12 years and stuff. My boss actually went to Palmer High School, has lived in Palmer his whole life kind of thing, and it's like, it's hard to fit in sometimes when everybody knows each other already.
Like, every once in a while I'll get close enough to someone where I can rant about how I feel like I have no real friends and how I'm, like, friends with everyone because I learned to be that way. And I can't keep connections, and, like, yeah. Long-term relationships are hard.
Two very different families, different branches of the military, different locations, different deployments. And yet, as military children, they have shared memories of life on base.
There was a playground less than one condo section kind of thing, yeah, away.
I was going to say same thing.
And, like, I would walk there and have, like, a watch. I had to, like, go in, check in every, like, hour or so. But it was really close. Everything, it would be considered a lot safer compared to, say, just Palmer in general.
I would go to the park every day by myself on base. I would ride my bike to the PX all the time. That was good memories there.
There are so many activities available on base. It can be difficult for the military child to adjust to off base and find not only friends, but things to do with friends. And that's where Holly comes in again. There's a Facebook page for families, J-Bear School Liaison Program. And liaison is spelled L-I-A-I-S-O-N. Always gets me.
And we always tell our parents, you know, just private message us. You don't have to put it out there for the whole world to see, but you can private message us. We'll get right back to you.
Families can also use jbearlife.com to access the school liaison and know more about what's happening on base. Cora and Emma remember fondly the exchange.
And what, then, the PX or the BX?
It has two different names. It's post exchange, base exchange. I think people call it different. They call it BX, yeah, up here, but we called it PX down there.
I had to wonder. You'd know you're a military child if...
So in the morning, it's reveille. That signals the beginning of the day. It goes off at 6:30. And then at the end of the duty day, it's retreat and followed by the national anthem.
Something I remember on base is that every day, 5 p.m., you gotta, like, a lot of people try to run inside for,
because
you have to stand, put your heart.
Because mm-hmm.
We had the cannons.
I don't know. But, like, I know what you're talking about. It's twice a day, like, one time in the morning, one time in the afternoon, like, 5 p.m., like, when the kind of, like, work day ends. If you're standing outside, like, have to have a hat on, hand on your heart, face the nearest flag.
Yep.
Yeah, like you just stand there for like a solid minute.
Yeah, everyone.
Well, I'm pretty sure they still do this over on the Elmendorf side of J-Bear. If you hear it and you're driving, you're supposed to pull over. Sometimes people get out and stand and face the music. Over on the Richardson side of the post where I work, they shoot off a cannon. Let me tell you, it'll scare the bejeebers out of you if you're not prepared for it. Especially on Fridays, sometimes they do it earlier. It kind of signals the end of their duty day, and it rocks my desk. And I've hit the floor a few times because I'm like, oh my gosh, what's happening? But the cannon is really neat. All military kids know that one. You stop what you're doing, and it's respectful. You know, if you're on the playground, you stop and you face the music. And
I remember, like, playing outside, and then you hear the horns, and you're like, oh, you gotta
stand like
there.
Instinct.
And it feels so long, and you're like, oh, my gosh.
It's just a sign of respect.
Holly was enlisted Air Force before retiring from active duty and taking the role of school liaison. Do the girls think they'll join the military?
Yeah, my dad and everyone in my family is like, you know, they want me to join. My dad's like, oh, go to West Point like I did. And I'm like, no thanks. I want my kids to have a different childhood than me. Obviously, I'm very grateful for being able to see the entire country. And even I lived in South Korea for 2 years as well. But it's had different impacts on me that I don't know if I want to do that to my kids, too.
Do you think you'll go in the military, Emma?
No.
Yeah.
It was always been an option, but, like, I've heard so much about how the military's changed so much from when my parents entered. Because I know at least for my mom, her hair was, like, always in a low bun because of her hat. You could only have, like, pearl, like, studded earrings if she had her ears pierced at all.
You can do a ponytail now, I think.
Yeah, I think you can do a ponytail now.
Just so you know, Emma likes to have green and blue highlights in her hair. It's a thing.
So today is actually the Purple Up Day.
That's right, April 11th.
April 11th. So the governor has signed a proclamation that this is the day that Alaska will celebrate the military student. So it's really military children, you know, little baby children all the way up to, you know, my kids are 30 years old. They're still military kids. And purple was chosen because it's a blend of all the colors. So, you know, you have your Army green, your Air Force blue, and the white. You combine them all together, you get purple. So it's just it's to celebrate every branch of the military.
So why a month for the military child?
We're dealing with the same challenges that our parents are.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just recognizing that you choose to join. You choose to have a family, and they're stuck with your choices. Not there's pros and cons, obviously, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of unknown things that people don't recognize, like little things like making friends or whatever, or like credit transferring. Mm-hmm. No one really thinks about that unless you're a military child.
Definitely, military children, they go through a lot. They don't ask to do all these moves, and they do them anyway. So they serve in a capacity.
It's Purple Up for the Military Child, and I wanted to know just a little bit more about what's known as the flower of the military child.
So the dandelion, when it's getting ready to seed, it just gets this fuzzy head on it, and it just takes a little breeze, and all those things just scatter. So that's kind of how military kids are. That was a great representation, and it still is around the world of the kids. They fly with the breeze, they plant themselves, they get strong, and they're a dandelion. It's going to take a real force to break them down.
Holly brought with her to the studio a stack of purple-edged patches, and in the middle of each one, a smiling superhero complete with mask and cape.
The superhero is a local patch. I designed this, and I chose the superhero because I think military kids are kind of superhero-ish, and it's outlined in purple, and they got their cape and their purple mask. So it's a morale patch. Different people design them. You swap patches. We can't really wear them on our uniforms. They're not part of anything official. It's a great reminder of why you serve. For these kids, they're the future, right?
Indeed they are. One word I ask Holly, just one word to describe her why as Jay Bear School Liaison.
It's passion. You know, I grew up, like I said, in the military, and I was also in the military, and I raised two kids in the military. To me, it's a passion, just to serve the community and to serve the country and to give those individuals, you know, everything that I feel that they deserve.
And for the soon-to-be graduates, just one word that describes life as a military child. It can be two.
I think adaptability probably is a good word. That's a word I used a lot in my college essay.
Adaptable.
Malleable.
Kind of
types of words.
Flexible. Adventurous even, maybe?
Yeah. It's definitely molded me into the person I am today.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Hold on. Don't go yet.
I just thought of an inside joke. Military kids would understand. The movers.
Oh, my gosh.
We would have movers come in and they were horrible. Like,
people throw your stuff out.
Things end up broken, damaged, don't know where things went.
The thing about breaking stuff, that's what I wrote my college essay on. I wrote it on getting attached to material objects and stuff. So I appreciate the good college essay that this life has given me.
I don't think I'll ever look at a dandelion or a child dressed as a superhero in the same way again. And I think next time I'm on a plane and the stewardess asks if there are any members of the military, I may have to tell them it needs to include the children of the military, our brave brats. And that's it for today's episode of Voices in the Met Zoo. We serve too. The phone number for Holly Warners and the J. Bear No Wrong Door resource is 907-384-7500. And be sure to check out the J-Bear Connect app. That's J-B-E-R Connect. I checked it out, and believe me, it's one-stop shopping for all things J-Bear, connecting military families with closures, activities, and more. In the meantime, our two Matsu military brats are like superheroes planting dandelions. Cora Klink has been accepted into the University of Hawaii Manoa. She will study civil engineering. Emma Keachley continues on with the University of Alaska. She looks forward to culinary arts. If you have a story or know of someone who does, contact us at bigcabbageradio.org. Until next time, it's been nice getting to know each other a little bit more. Special thanks to the Big Cabbage editorial board and sound editor Emma Keachley and all of our military children. Thanks for listening. Stay good out there, Matsu.
This was Voices of the Matsu, sharing stories told by those who live in the Matsu borough. To revisit this and past stories, go to bigcabbageradio.org. This project is funded by a grant from the Matsu Health Foundation and is produced by Emily Forstner for Big Cabbage Radio. The views expressed in Voices of the Matsu do not represent the views of Big Cabbage Radio or the Matsu Health Foundation. Comments or questions about this show may be sent to voices@bigcabbageradio.org.